You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. The time is 6 o'clock. This Way Out is coming up next.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society's concert season, which this month features the Kathy Kallick Bluegrass Band, October 19th, 7:30 p.m., at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. Kathy Kallick is an award-winning singer-songwriter, having received a Grammy and international bluegrass music accolades. Her five-piece band features more IBMA winners, including local fiddler Annie Staninetz, a former Emerging Artist of the Year. Portland Folk Music Society concerts in November will bring the Honey Whiskey Trio and Legends of the Celtic Harp with Patrick Ball in a special pre-holiday program. PFS presents concerts monthly, now through next May. For more information, go to the website, kboo.fm, and look on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The 5'2", 105-pound shepherd had been severely beaten, burned, and tied to a fence post in near freezing temperatures.
So-called family values organizations spend millions of dollars promoting that homosexuality is an abhorrent behavior that can and should be changed.
This is what I was trying to stop. This is exactly why I did what I did.
God hates fags. Why is that so hard for you guys to understand?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle.
And I'm Brett Gordon. Taiwan voters face dueling marriage referenda.
Uganda's ethics minister calls queer safe space a crime.
And remembering Matthew Shepard 20 years on.
Those stories and more this week because you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Brian DeShazer.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 13, 2018. Taiwan's Constitutional Court declared in May last year that civil marriage should be open to same-gender couples. The justices gave the legislative yuan up to 2 years to change relevant laws. If they failed to do so, the ruling said, marriage equality would automatically become the law of the land. Lawmakers have resisted taking action as strident opposition grows from the conservative Christian umbrella group calling itself the Happiness of the Next Generation Alliance. They gathered more than enough signatures on petitions to qualify three separate referenda earlier this month, one to confirm that civil marriage is exclusively heterosexual, another to offer same-gender couples less than equal civil unions instead of marriage, and a third asking if LGBTQ subject matter should be taught in public schools. They are, of course, opposed. Led by the Taiwan Alliance to Promote Civil Partnership Rights, equality activists appear to have succeeded in qualifying a competing referendum to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. So Taiwan voters will have to decide which of the four referenda to approve. They'll go to the polls on November 24th, when Taiwanese citizens were already scheduled to vote for candidates in regional elections.
A referendum cannot overturn a constitutional court ruling, but according to media reports, the government is required to propose laws that match referenda outcomes. so the government would need to propose a marriage equality law or some kind of civil unions law, depending on the referenda results. There could be yet another lawsuit if a civil unions law is ultimately enacted instead of the court-ordered marriage equality.
In a related story, press reports this week suggested that Romania's government would be introducing legislation to create civil unions for same-gender couples. It follows the stunning rejection last week of a referendum there, also pushed by conservative Christian forces, to enshrine hetero-only marriage in the socially conservative country's constitution. The proposal required the participation of at least 30% of eligible voters to take effect, but, perhaps heeding the call by equality advocates to stay home, just 20% of eligible voters went to the polls.
Uganda's Minister for Ethics and Integrity, Simon Lokoto, said this week that Rainbow Riots, an activist group planning to establish a safe space center for LGBTQ people in Kampala, would be an illegal act. They will have to take it somewhere else, Lokoto said, adding that homosexuality is not allowed and completely unacceptable in Uganda. Same-gender sex in the East African nation is a criminal act under colonial-era laws, punishable by up to life in prison. After months of planning and fundraising, organizers at Rainbow Riots say they'll continue working on their project. It would be the first queer center in the region. Trans activist Alicia Houston told Gay Star News that, "Lokoto's condemnation cannot stop us. This center is not a criminal act." Entrenched Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni claimed at a rally earlier this year that outsiders were trying to import oral sex into his country. "The mouth is for eating," he said, "not for sex." Attempts to hold a simple pride event in Kampala have usually been banned in advance by government authorities or shut down by security police, so Rainbow Riots no doubt has a difficult road ahead.
A second annual LGBTQ Pride March filled the streets of Pristina, the capital of Kosovo, on October 10th. A far-right political party had called for the Parade of Shame to be banned, but it went ahead without incident under the slogan of "In the Name of Freedom." Kosovo's first Pride March was successfully held last year. Prime Minister Ramush Haradinaj posted his support for this year's event on Facebook, writing that sexual orientation is up to the individual and should be respected, and that LGBT and Pride Week will always have institutional support to be free and secure to express their orientation. A number of government officials and members of foreign embassies joined the mayor of Pristina and several hundred LGBTQ activists and allies in the march, which was guarded by a large number of police officers and security forces. Homosexuality is a difficult subject in the socially conservative, mostly Muslim, Balkan nation. As part of its effort to join the European Union, Kosovo has a law protecting LGBTQ people from discrimination, but it's not always enforced, and same-gender couples have no legal rights.
Tokyo wants to put its best foot forward ahead of hosting the 2020 Summer Olympics. The city's Metropolitan Assembly took one of those steps this week by approving an LGBTQ anti-discrimination ordinance that specifically targets hate speech. Officials will monitor public spaces, like city parks, to shut down hate rhetoric by anti-queer groups. It also commits Tokyo officials to conducting LGBTQ rights education programs. The ordinance reportedly includes steps to improve access by same-gender couples to mutual hospital visitation. The city will also host an Olympics Pride House during the 2020 Games and Paralympics. While the conservative federal government lags behind growing public support for basic anti-discrimination protections and legal recognition for same-gender couples, 8 cities and city wards have passed local measures that allow queer couples to register their unions. Those registrations allow them hospital visitation and a few other rights that heterosexual couples in Japan take for granted.
This court has held that nobody should be forced to have or express a political opinion in which he does not believe.
That's Lady Hale, the president of the United Kingdom's Supreme Court, announcing the much-anticipated ruling in the UK's very own Gay Cake case. This one pitted queer activist Gareth Lee against Belfast's Asher's Bakery. It started 4 years ago when Lee asked the bakery to make a cake that depicted Sesame Street's rumored gay couple, Bert and Ernie, with the slogan, "Support Gay Marriage." Northern Ireland is the only part of the United Kingdom without marriage equality. Lee told reporters after the ruling was announced that he was made to feel like a second-class citizen when Daniel MacArthur, who owns the bakery with his wife Amy, refused to make the cake for him on religious grounds.
I'm concerned not just for the implications for myself or other gay people, but for every single one of us.
The court was careful to distinguish the difference between this case, however, and the high-profile Masterpiece Cake Shop case in the United States. Asher's Bakery would have refused to supply this particular cake to anyone, whatever their personal characteristics. So, there was no discrimination on grounds of sexual orientation. Cake maker MacArthur celebrated the ruling, which overturned lower court decisions.
The judges have given a clear signal today. In fact, it couldn't be clearer. Family businesses like ours are free to focus on giving all their customers the best service they can without being forced to promote other people's campaigns.
While some LGBTQ activists condemned the ruling, Australian-born but British-based human rights activist Peter Tatchell tended to agree with MacArthur during an interview with his native country's PM program.
Let's put things in reverse. I wouldn't feel happy with a gay baker being forced by law to decorate a cake with a message against gay marriage. This is just a judgment that people should not be compelled against their wishes to promote messages and ideas with which they disagree.
In an interesting twist, a photography company rejected the business of the Christian Institute, the notoriously anti-queer group that bankrolled the Asher's Bakery appeal. The company had accepted a deposit from the Institute to provide photography services outside the court following the announcement of the ruling. After learning the details of the case, however, the company refused service and refunded the deposit. Tony Hsu of the online agency through which the Institute booked the photographer told Pink News that the High Court affirmed that companies could do that if they feel that it goes against their morals. We appreciate that this looks like tit for tat. And it is.
And finally, the diminutive plaintiff in the U.S. Supreme Court case that overturned DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, a prelude to the High Court's subsequent ruling that opened civil marriage to same-gender couples, has been honored in her hometown of Philadelphia. If you don't know who she was, check out her story online. Edie Windsor Way, the new street sign for the block between Walnut and Locust Streets in what's known as the city's gayborhood, was unveiled on October 7th. The irrepressible Windsor died in September 2017 at the age of 88 after virtually becoming the poster person for marriage equality in the U.S. Reacting to her passing last year, former President Barack Obama said that few were as small in stature as Edie Windsor, and few made as big a difference to America. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed a proclamation earlier this year declaring June 20th, Windsor's birthday, as Edie Windsor Day. Quoting one of the slogans in the campaign for renaming the street sign, a Facebook posting celebrated the unveiling with, "Don't postpone joy today. Take a stroll the Edie Windsor way."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending October 13th, 2018. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazor, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the always updated thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazor.
And I'm John Dyer V.
Hello, this is Judy Shepherd, the mother of Matthew Shepherd. And you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
When Matthew Shepherd died on October 12, 1998, his murder became an international emblem of senseless homophobic hatred. As the world observes the 20th anniversary of the tragedy and its aftermath, we revisit our extended report from October 19, 1998. I offered some closing thoughts after This Way Out's Greg Gordon narrated our original reading of the Book of Matthew.
This is Poudre Valley Hospital with the final update on Matthew Shepherd, Monday, October 12th. Matthew died shortly before 1 a.m. today as a result of injuries he sustained last week.
At dozens of unprecedented marches, memorial services, and candlelight vigils held across the U.S. last week, with more scheduled in the coming week, gays and lesbians and a number of non-gay people have reacted to the brutal gay-bashing death of University of Wyoming student Matthew Shepard with shock, grief, and anger. We'll visit Washington, D.C., West Hollywood, California, and Madison, Wisconsin to sample some of those events and pay our respects, unlike a handful of religious extremists, at Matthew's funeral in Casper, Wyoming. But we begin with the details of the crime itself and some of the issues it raises in this report by Verna Avery Brown.
In what appears to have been an anti-gay hate crime, the 5 foot, 2 inch, 105-pound shepherd had been severely beaten, burned, and tied to a fence post in near-freezing temperatures last Wednesday outside Laramie, Wyoming. State officials now say two men, Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson, will face murder charges for the attack, and their girlfriends are likely to be charged as accessories. The father of one of the suspects told the Denver Post that his son, Aaron McKinney, never set out to kill Shepard, but instead wanted to get back at Shepard for making a pass at his son in front of his friends at a campus bar.
I find it hard to believe that he would do that if he had not been led to believe that the individuals were gay.
Jim Osborne, chair of the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgendered Association, a group established as a safe haven on campus for gays and lesbians.
Matt was a kind, caring, respectful individual. He was not flirtatious, or he was not the type of guy to go out and look for a one-night stand. That just was not Matt.
Wyoming is one of 9 states that have not passed hate crime legislation. Wyoming Governor Jim Geringer, who in the past has neither supported nor opposed such bills, revisited the issue.
We're very open to changing our law where it's not strict enough or where it's not comprehensive enough. We could enhance penalties, but how do you enhance the penalty when a death has occurred? If capital punishment is the result, how do you enhance that? Our laws already cover that. So I'm not sure what we would add.
The point is not all bias crimes are murders.
Wyoming State Legislator Mike Massey is co-sponsor of the bias crime bill, which has failed several times in the state legislature.
This one was terrible, but it's not the only type of bias crimes that occur in Wyoming, just like anywhere else in the country. It occurs day in and day out. An African-American man one time was run off his bicycle up near Jackson. Some teachers who are minority teachers have had desks thrown at them by students. And I would imagine that 90% of the bias crimes don't end up in murder. And as a result, an enhanced penalty would have quite an effect.
Lori Jean of the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center says at least some of the responsibility for the rising violence against gays and lesbians rests with the bogus cure claims of the religious right.
So-called family values organizations spend millions of dollars on anti-gay campaigns promoting that homosexuality is an abhorrent behavior that can and should be changed, that are viewed as quackery by every reputable medical establishment from the American Medical Association on down. Campaigns which help to foster an environment that allows some people to kill another person simply because he is gay.
We were incredibly shocked and disgusted at the Matthew Shepard death and the way that he was killed.
Tony Verona, legal counsel with the Human Rights Campaign, the country's largest lesbian-gay political group.
But what is most sad is that we were not surprised, given that gay people are at the brunt of anti-gay hate crimes all the time. They are actually, I think it's something like 12% of all reported hate crimes are anti-gay hate crimes. So there are hundreds and thousands of Matthews out there that are victims of hate crimes or are no longer with us, given that they have been killed just because they had the courage to say, I am gay or I am lesbian.
We have to have the will of our political leaders to get into the high schools.
Again, Lori Jean.
That's where we need to be doing the education. And the instant you start talking about doing education in the high schools, that will prevent youth from committing anti-gay hate crimes. There are some people who get scared, but that's where we've got to start.
You're listening to a commemoration of the 20th anniversary of the death of Matthew Shepard.
We are here to express 3 equally important emotions: terrible sorrow, deep anger, and absolute and unshakable determination.
Openly gay Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts, pioneering comedian Ellen DeGeneres, and Shepard's best friend Walter Bowden were among the speakers at a candlelight vigil held on the steps of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C.
There are people who make excuses for these murderers. There are people who will go to the polls and vote against a violent hate crime statute and against allowing the schools to play the role they ought to play in fighting this vicious prejudice. And the sad fact is they will go to the polls in greater number than many of us will. So one of the things you can do between now and November is this. Make sure that you and everyone who cares for you, everyone who expresses to you their horror and sympathy and disgust at this brutal murder, make sure that they take the time and trouble between now and November to find out the position on gay and lesbian fairness and equality of every single individual on that ballot and get out there, and we can protect ourselves with our vote in November.
I know we all feel the same way, and I'm here, and I'm, you know, he's got his two close friends here, and I don't even know him, and I'm thinking this is just really selfish of me. I mean, what, pull yourself together, and it just hit me why I am so devastated by it. It's because this is what I was trying to stop. This is exactly why I did what I did.
Just a week before he was so savagely tortured and murdered, Matt told me how happy he was to be back home, how comfortable he felt in Laramie, and how safe he felt there compared to the big city. I was so happy to hear that because I had encouraged Matt to come home. Matt's sense of safety was betrayed by every legislator in Wyoming and in this nation who has ever opposed or voted against hate crime legislation over the last year.
Comments by some of those participating in a candlelight vigil in West Hollywood, California, reflected the anger and renewed fears felt everywhere.
I've been thrown eggs at walking down the street. I've been bashed all through my, you know, childhood at school.
It really limits me. I can't be affectionate in public. It's gotten to the point that, you know, people that I have been with have been complaining, you know, you're not affectionate, you're not affectionate, and I'm afraid to be. It depresses me sometimes, and I think, God, you know, I said, why do I have to be this way? And I think, no, why do they have to be that way?
I'm upset and saddened by what happened to this young boy, but I'm also angered by the fact that we have leaders in our Congress that equate us to kleptomaniacs. And I believe that those people are really responsible, as much as the two men and the two girls that were charged. Those people in our Congress that support this kind of hatred, even though they may not support the violence, they support the hatred.
A march and rally in Madison, Wisconsin, exemplified the reaffirmation of community that was also widely expressed.
Less than 2 days after University of Wyoming student Matthew Shepard died from wounds suffered in a horrific gay bashing, hundreds gathered on the library mall at the University of Wisconsin to express anger, grief, and a resolve that the climate of hatred and fear that produced his death must end. On a windy, cold Wisconsin night, people young and old, gay and straight, drew warmth and comfort from one another. Holding each other tight and bathed in the light of candles, they marched solemnly up State Street, their ranks stretching for several blocks, a portrait of Matthew Shepard held high above the crowd.
All I can think of is the importance of our honesty, of our openness, of our visibility, of us using our voices to speak loudly and clearly and unequivocally about who we are and supporting one another. Silence is death.
The rally concluded, and several dozen of us lingered in the dark and cold. We were reminded of the source of our strength, the special sense of love and community that we share. At the base of the Capitol steps was a makeshift monument to Matthew, built around his portrait, elegant and eloquent in its simplicity. One by one, as people left the rally, they added their candles to a glowing assemblage. Clustered around it, our bodies blocked the wind, allowing the candles to burn brightly, even while we basked in the warmth of their glow.
This is John Quinlan reporting.
We should try to remember that because Matt's last few minutes of consciousness on Earth may have been hell, his family and friends want more than ever to say their farewells to him in a peaceful, dignified, and loving manner.
God hates fags. Why is that so hard for you guys to understand?
A handful of religious extremists from Kansas and Texas ignored what seemed like a simple request by Matthew's father, Dennis Shepherd, before the funeral in Casper, Wyoming on October 16, 1998, during which one of Matthew's cousins read a poem she had written for him to say goodbye.
He lived in shame, he died in shame. I mean, it's not okay to be gay. I mean, it's a soul-damning, nation-destroying lifestyle.
If you guys don't recognize him as a human being, then you don't need to be out here.
We're offended that the state of Wyoming and the governor would say to this public school system here in Casper, Wyoming, to fly their flags at half-mast to honor this sodomite.
I think it is so disrespectful to come to a young man's funeral.
On behalf of our son, Matthew Shepherd, we want to thank the citizens of the United States and the people of the world who have expressed their deepest sympathy and condolences to our family during these trying times. A person as caring and loving as our son Matt would be overwhelmed by what this incident has done to the hearts and souls of people around the world. Matthew was the type of person that if this had happened to another person, would have been the first on the scene to offer his help, his hope, and his heart to the family.
Maddie, I love you with all of my heart. I wish you only knew how much. You'll be happier with this brand new start. The world's hearts you now have touched.
One of the lingering questions that surrounds the death of Matthew Shepherd is, why now? Why has the hate murder of a young gay man gone to the hearts of so many across the country when so many deadly bias crimes go unnoticed? Some say that it is the increased visibility of gays and lesbians as real people rather than stereotypes. Some credit it to Shepherd's innocent boy-next-door persona, contrasted with the unsettling image of the scarecrow lashed to a fence. Some point out that neither of these rationales are proof of a newfound compassion for gays and lesbians. Instead, they betray the still deep-seated biases against the other in our society. The measure by which people qualify as real is relative, and the privileged white college student does not, in fact, live next door to everybody. Perhaps the real question is why the murder of Matthew Shepherd attracted the attention of the national mainstream media. People cannot react to a situation they do not know about, and few of the violent homophobic hate crimes that happen week after week, month after month, receive the spotlight granted the Shepherd case. Perhaps it is the media that determines whose horror is horrible enough to reach an audience already numbed to the run-of-the-mill blood and gore, already set in its ways regarding who will be a victim deserving of sympathy. And perhaps, if more of the faces on the statistics of anti-lesbian hate crime passed muster for America's television cameras, there would be an outpouring of commitment to stop the violence, rather than an all-too-easily-forgotten outpouring of tears for a single slaughtered human symbol in Wyoming.
That was Lucia Chappell with some immediate thoughts about the meaning of the Matthew Shepherd tragedy in October 1998. 20 years after his death, Wyoming remains one of 5 U.S. states without a hate crimes law. Despite the enactment of the federal Matthew Shepherd and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act of 2009 that Judy and Dennis Shepherd fought to pass, 15 states that do have anti-hate laws still do not include crimes against LGBTQ people.
With violence against trans women of color in particular skyrocketing during the Trump administration, the Shepherds have continued their anti-hate work through the Matthew Shepherd Foundation and the online youth resource Matthew's Place. On the 20th anniversary of their son's death, they announced that his ashes will at last be interred at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. His parents want the site of Matthew's remains to provide a place for people to reflect on the ravages of hate and where it will have much-needed protection from desecration by haters.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from John Dyer V and Brian DeShazer. Triumph and Blackberry performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music.
This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Thanks for helping to keep our 30-year streak going at thiswayout.org.
Look for This Way Out Radio on social media and wherever you get your podcasts. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA.
For everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell.
And I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org.
And on 5GFM Kadena, South Australia.
99.1 Rehoboth Beach, Delaware.
KICI, Iowa City, Iowa.
And more than 200 other stations around the world,
including this community radio station.
Stay tuned.
Timothy Leary.